things like Confucius and some of those Eastern philosophers and stuff like that. That looks so much that it's been passed down into their world. They talk about it. And then so much of the history we have is because it's fantastic enough that we got. There we go. Welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. We're pumped that you're with us. Joe is awesome. How is Joe doing?
Joe is awesome.
Joe is awesome. How'd you know? I did. I was prophesying. It's good. How has it been? I mean, it's been more snow this winter than we've had any other. So Gus the bus has been
parked,
grounded.
Yeah.
Grounded. When's the next excursion?
I want to say Easter's probably the next time out. But if I can get away like the first minute, you know, if I say, hey, I'm tearing out, don't be surprised.
Where's the next spot? What do you think?
It's probably Florida. I mean, this time of year, you know, that's you can get there and it's 70 degrees and it's not that like that here. Yeah.
I'll take that any day. Beautiful. Beautiful. So my wife is doing a 5K in May up in Cleveland. She is very excited about
that. Nice.
She signed up, registered, and we got to go the night before she gets her number. I think it's like the Cleveland Marathon, but they do a 10K and a 5K with it. And she's very excited. She ran a 5K yesterday at the gym. She walked, but she completed it. And she goes, all right, so I know I can do it. Because you had to give like an approximate time for them that you thought you were going to finish. So I don't know how many runners they're expecting, but maybe they're going to release people in heats and let the people that are slow go first or something. I don't know.
My goal was to do like a sub 30-minute 5K. That was my whole goal. I think when it went down to the Bahamas, I did it like 28 and 30 seconds or something like that.
My first and only 5K, I completed in 43 minutes.
43 minutes.
So my first mile was like 8 minutes. Like I went out of the gate and you got the big crowd and everybody's running.
Adrenaline.
Yeah. That I got to the first like water stop and I was like, what have I done? I made a horrible mistake. And I spent the second mile trying to catch my breath. And then the third mile portion of it was uphill and never stopped. But I had a few moments where I thought I was going to, you know, crawl across the finish line instead of run. But
5K is the perfect segment of a race because it's just long enough to like push on you a little bit, mm-hmm. but not so long that if you make the mistake of like eat something wrong the day before, you're a little tired, you can still bust through it.
Yeah. I mean, you just yak on the side of the road and keep going. I mean, it's good. How's Deb's shop doing?
Good. Oh, that thing is killer, man.
Yeah. She's having fun with it.
And the coolest thing is when she talks about it, she talks like a kid with excitement, you know, and I think as adults, we totally lose the ability to like get excited in front of other adults. Yeah. And I love that she's able to tap into that.
That's super cool. Did you like the Super Bowl?
I did other things like that were more important than it.
Did you watch any of the commercials?
I did. Yeah. I watched probably the first quarter worth of commercials.
Did you have a favorite or what was your?
The Uber Eats one where they were eating all the weird stuff. Yeah. That was my favorite.
Yeah. Did you see the Coinbase commercial?
I didn't. I missed it.
I thought it was the best commercial. It literally was a blank screen with a QR code just bouncing around on the screen. And the whole time you're like, what's the QR code? I got to scan the QR code. And I scanned it and it was an opportunity to enter a sweepstakes with Coinbase if you had a download or you had to download. But they did it and they did so well with the ad. Within 10 seconds of the ad, Coinbase crashed and they had so much
that's
traffic.
Why I couldn't get into my account that day.
Yeah, so on the Super Bowl it was maybe for an hour or something like that.
Well, I saw that on the list of people who bought commercials there were a ton of crypto companies, so I bought a bunch of Bitcoin before that.
Did anything happen with
made some money on it.
Nice.
Not a lot. I mean, it wasn't.
No,
it was enough to justify
buying. It's been in a downswing. I think they're saying crypto markets since November are down 10 to 15% right around the time I started investing. You
know, thanks, Doug.
Yeah, sorry. It's all my fault. But, you know, on Coinbase, I don't know if you've done this, but they'll give you free crypto on certain things. They have like these videos that explain. They're like new up and coming altcoins or whatever. And you watch these 4 or 5 videos and answer a question about them and they'll give you $3 of their coin or whatever. So I made $20 on crypto one night, just watching videos and answering questions for a half hour. And I was like, done.
All right.
Then I transferred out of those crappy altcoins into some other coins. But yeah, no, it's fun. I like that. The halftime show had mixed reviews. Were you a fan of the halftime show?
Not at all. No. I grew up in that era. Yeah. Those were all the artists but the song selections was just terrible. Like, I mean, you could have really rocked it if you picked different songs.
So my friends, classmates all like loved the show. And I do think it is humorous. And Ben Shapiro pointed out yesterday that in the midst of cancel culture and all this sort of stuff, you know, the artist that they selected for that and the songs that they've sung, the verbiage that they use, the themes that they sing about, the fact that that was the halftime show and not, you know, and they weren't canceled. He pointed out the irony in, yeah, in that, and the hypocrisy in that. So, but yeah, no, it definitely took me back to like every school dance I ever went to. And it was neat to see those artists. Everybody gave 50 Cent a hard time. I don't think starting hanging upside down like he did was a great look. Well, I get why they did it, but he just is not in the same shape he was in when he did that originally. And so everybody's giving him a hard time for being a bit out of shape. And so some of the memes and jokes and stuff were
relentless.
Yeah, it's a little funny. You know, part of me is like, you know, I don't have any room to talk, but it was a bit humorous. The game was okay. I was kind of anticlimactic after the awesome playoff games we've had. It was kind of like, oh yeah, the game's over, they won. And I don't know, I'm sure they were excited, but I didn't have a dog in the fight.
I spent the whole weekend on the couch because I pulled something in my neck. I don't know if as an adult, when you do some kind of injury, that when you're a kid, you would have bounced back like in 32 seconds, right? But I think I got something out of the backseat of the Jeep and I just turned it away and something popped. But every time I moved my neck, I felt like there was like knives being jabbed into my back. I'm still kind of walking around like I have a neck brace on because I'm kind of afraid, but it feels better today.
Yeah. We were driving to Kalahari a couple weeks ago and I sneezed, and I usually sneeze really loud, but every once in a while, like we're in the car, my wife would be like, can you please contain yourself? But you have to release the energy. And so I tried and it like knocked the wind out of me. Like I felt it like in my back. And I was like, I think I just threw my back out with a sneeze. And she was like, well, you are about to turn 37. And then, you know, my birthday was Sunday. And so I sat around in my sweatpants and watched football. It was wonderful. But yeah, there are those things as you get older, you know, on the downslope here to 40 that, you know, your body just doesn't recover the same way. You know, Sam training for this 5K, she did a 5K years ago, and you know, she ran, she goes, man, I'm so sore today. And I only did an extra mile. Normally I walk 2 miles and now I walked a mile, ran a mile, walked a mile. And she was very, very sore this morning. And I was like, ice and ibuprofen, honey, that you need, you know, and it's the recipe for, you know, getting fixed, I think, coming into your 40s. So what's been rattling around? What are some of the new ideas in Joe's head right now? What's going on?
So the stuff that I'm working on has kept me so occupied. Like usually I get these, you know, weekend new ideas, new whatever, but I'm like maxed out on the stuff that I'm getting my head into. But I've been going crazy a little bit. Okay. So it allows me to delve into stuff that's sort of like not stuff you can talk about or articulate very easily. One of the questions I posted on social media, I talked on the radio on Saturday after I hurt my neck, was how eager would you, I'll ask you this question. How eager would you be that if you could get your brain to live for like 300 years by chopping off all non-essential anything, but they'll supplant a nice virtual reality so that your brain will be occupied and have something to do. So you won't need real arms and legs. You can run through a virtual reality garden.
No,
you're not going to do that.
No, not a chance.
Oh, come on. You can live 300 years. No,
you can't live. That's the thing.
But you wouldn't know any different.
Yeah. So you would not, you would stay in the matrix. You would eat the steak. Is that what you're saying?
As my muscles start popping, then I could say, you know what? Like if you'd asked me on Sunday, just hack it off, just put it in the dome.
I just can't, like looking at, you know, to use that analogy from the Matrix, like I don't want to eat the steak and not realize, no, like I want to squeeze the dirt in my hands. And if that means I get, you know, 50 years, then so be it. If it means I get.
Now, if you're in the Matrix already, like if this is the simulation, are you going to be disappointed?
I want to come out. Like I want to be awakened.
What if, not knowing what the outside world even looks like, what if it's it's worse than the Matrix?
Oh, it doesn't matter. Like to me, like the goal is to be as real as possible. Like I want to, to me, that's the power in life. Everybody spends their whole life running away from feelings and pain and all the, but that's all the good stuff in life. That's what makes us alive.
So given the option in the future that the virtual reality is a place you could go, what about hanging out temporarily? Now, maybe not all the time in the
Matrix. People do that all the time. We play video games. We escape and different stuff.
Instead of watching the football game on TV, you get to put the hood on and you're in the stadium. You can sit wherever you want. You could do whatever you want. That's a
fascinating idea. Yeah, I would give it a shot.
Okay, how about a weekend? Would you spend a whole weekend doing a vacation than someplace that you don't have to go for?
No, to be in a vacation spot, like I need to smell it, taste it. I want to put the sand in my hands.
Replicate it. That's all doable. Come on. You can. If I could promise you that you won't know the difference and you could touch the sand.
That's so sad.
You see what I'm doing here, right?
Yeah, that's so sad. Why would you want to?
I can totally do it.
No way. No. I want the real. I want to see it, smell it, taste it. I want to be in that spot, not in a fake version of it.
Okay. So your tolerance is a couple hours, just like you play a video game.
Exactly.
And you pop out and go back to your normal scheduled programming.
Well, I don't think, and maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. But I don't think that's incredibly healthy because the escapism of that would lead ultimately to, well, why do I want to live in a life that can hurt me when I can live in the simulation that's perfect? And that's just, no, thank you.
Well, in my simulation, you're in there too. So I can meet you virtually and have a nice relationship with you. And
so in the metaverse,
yes,
there is actually a couple of churches that have started doing church in the metaverse. And I haven't decided if I like it yet or not. But they have like the video aspect of their screen. People attend virtually, that people raise their hands, people give, people like their little bot person goes in there, and I'm super fascinated to see where that goes. And some of these churches seem to be doing really cool stuff with it. And so I'm not opposed to another medium within our reality, but as a replacement, that's where I struggle, if that makes sense.
So I'm reading The Stand, right?
Okay.
And really digging into
it. Yeah, I saw you posted about it.
And so, I mean, a lot of what in that story, you have this, everybody's dying off in these big numbers. You can't be around other people. You're stuck. Very similar to what, you know, we flirted with a little bit in our own culture here. And you know, we were going through the drive-through at a restaurant or one of those curbside things. I'm thinking this is a product of COVID hitting and them inventing a whole lot of stuff that give us services that we wouldn't have entertained, you know, before that. So I think a lot of, you know, that spinoff has been, but if you take that back and like, what happens if we create so dangerous a world that it's not healthy to be in the real world where being in the virtual reality is the only way really to experience it?
Well, I mean, we've talked about, you and I've talked about this, the cycles that society goes through. And I think that danger aspect or going into that place is only going to produce, we'll swing up the other side. The Ferris wheel always goes around. And so, yeah, we might be in a dangerous season, or you might be born in a dangerous country or a dangerous world. But at some point the cycle goes and spins. And so, to take the wheel off the spinner is what you're asking to do. And that just robs life of all of its joy. It may rob it of all of its dangers and all of its risks. But ultimately, the joy is empty.
So when you're watching a series that like a show or whatever that takes place in a different setting, time, place, like an old, I was watching, what is that, 1883?
We're going to start that. Is it good?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I love historical. So for my birthday, I watched Lincoln with Daniel Day-Lewis, and my wife fell asleep on the couch and she woke up and she's like, okay. I was like, I'm crying through them passing the 13th Amendment. I was like, I don't know if they're going to pass it yet. It's beautiful. You know, the kids are like, Dad, what are you doing? I'm watching the historical thing. And I'm like, he voted aye. I was like, yes. And cause it's my birthday, I get to watch what I wanted on Sunday. So did that and then watched the Super Bowl.
So I picture myself like if I were to grow, you know, we're in that era, like which character would I be? Would I survive? Would I even want to play, you know, being in there? Do you put yourself in those positions?
Yeah, imagination, role play, all that stuff makes sense. For me, though, the condition of having it be valuable is what am I taking away to apply to my actual life? So I don't watch a lot of comedy. My wife and I don't watch a ton of comedy. I've gone and seen Jim Gaffigan live or other comedians, you know, as a date night or whatever. But I don't do a ton of comedy because I don't see a lot of inherent value for my life. I don't do a ton of, just pointless movies. Like I'll watch some of them because my wife's like, hey, I want to watch whatever. And I'm like, all right, this movie's stupid, but you know, sit through it. But you know, I watch a lot of the historical dramas. I watch a lot of the stuff like that because I want to put myself in the shoes of someone that I find inspiring, or I want to draw some sort of lesson or takeaway that's going to make me want to do something in the real world.
So if I can find a movie or a skit or something that will just make me flat out belly laugh the whole time through, I got to do that like once a month. Do you have a goat? You laugh all the time. So there's,
I do.
You do not have a lack of laughter in your world.
It's true.
But if you wanted to get like really laughing, like crying, laughing, what's your go-to?
So I definitely have worn out a copy of Tommy Boy and Dumb and Dumber.
Okay.
Those are classics, and I don't think you can go wrong with either one of those. They're just funny. And it's pure funny, if that makes sense, especially compared to today's standards. You know, Dodgeball for a while was a good one, and it was just stupid funny. But I happen to like Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson and those guys. That sort of combo is funny. Trying to think.
Any YouTubers or any social media people?
I save all the videos of people on TikTok falling for my wife. Okay. She giggles her way through people getting injured. Just thinks that's hilarious. And I'm like, well, you know, and then I laugh at her laughing. So, no, I don't necessarily have, you know, I like, Jim Gaffigan. I like, Brian Regan, a couple of those type of comedians that are funny, and, it's neat. I tried to show my kids one or two, and they just didn't find them funny at all, where Sam and I are like cracking up, and I'm like, do they not get the content, or is their humor just different than ours because they're, you know, whatever this generation is now, Gen Z.
There's one that Ryan and I started watching. You try this out with your kids, because we had to find something that we both found value in and that we both found humor in.
Okay.
And so we found this guy that does a YouTube videos called Game It Out.
Okay. Right?
Dude is hilarious. Don't watch his old stuff because it's a little on the vulgar side, but all the newer stuff is really made for, you know, clean language, whatever. But what he does is he plays a video game, but he doesn't play it straight up. He tries to play it as wrong as possible. And the antics that he gets himself into in these video games are amazing. So
are you an Office fan? I'm not. Really. I just want to punch him in the face the whole time. Steve Carell. I'm just like, oh, so frustrating. But somebody doing that might bother me, like playing it wrong on purpose. Like my kids might think that's hilarious.
Your kids will love it.
I'm like that. Like you saying that, I'm already like, why would I waste my
time? Give it a shot. Game it out. Game it out with Josh.
Game it out with Josh. I'm sure Graham and Ben will laugh their heads off at it. Yeah.
And he comes out with, I think every 2 weeks, he comes out with a new video. But I'm like picturing these guys. He gets many, many millions of hits. Works on a video for 2 weeks, playing a video game wrong with humor commentary, and makes his living off of doing that. Like, it makes me one day, like, I'm checking out all this crap that I'm doing and just go make a video for a couple weeks.
Yeah,
just to see if it could be done.
There's the couple of memes that have been out. There's one a while ago that said, you know, they encourage you to dress like the job that you want. And the question is, what does an eccentric billionaire wear? It's like some guy in pajamas, like, you know, sipping a mojito and carrying, you know, newspaper around. But they had one recently that that said, you know, go to college, you know, start a company, work, you know, 60 hours a week, you know, eat ramen noodles, and eventually in 20 years, maybe you'll be successful. And then it's like, create NFT, make a YouTube video. And it shows some kid with, like, you know, his sweatshirt's got, like, you know, stains on it and stuff like that. Here's today's millionaire. You know, it's like, man, like you do look at stuff like that. And that's why I think purpose is so important. Like, when you're fulfilling your purpose, like, it doesn't matter that I went to school and I busted my butt for all these years and those things, like, I'm doing what fulfills me. And money is such a small part of the equation. People make it such a big deal. And then when you get some, you realize it really wasn't that important. Like, it didn't actually fulfill me. And you see this with these famous athletes or actors or whatever, they arrive at some sort of spot and it's like, well, I thought the money would be different. And all the money does is just really amplify who you are underneath anyway. So
one of the most disappointing statistics I look at every morning, I will look at what is trending content wise.
Okay.
To see what my fellow man is interested in looking at and viewing and doing. And so we line up maybe some of our content that goes along with what people are interested in. And most of the time, the top 20 things, I couldn't produce any content in that direction just because I have brain cells, right? If I lacked them, totally would be able to pull that off. But I sometimes I'm like, how would I pull off two people slapping each other with a frying pan, right? How would I even do that? But that's what people are interested in seeing. And
so I heard an interesting video. It was a conspiracy theory video that China created TikTok, right?
Yes.
And President Trump was very, we're going to shut TikTok down unless an American company buys it and all that. You remember that whole deal in the news, right? And everybody was like, you know, that goes against all mores and all that sort of stuff. Well, in this video, they talked about in China, the algorithm that TikTok runs is different than the algorithm they run in the United States. And in China, the algorithm and the videos that are boosted are the videos of the things the government wants to produce, like engineers and smart kids and all this stuff. And in the United States, it's all the dumb stuff.
Oh.
And they were talking about the ultimate cyber warfare train a whole generation that you can be successful by doing some dumb dance or by slapping somebody in the head with a frying pan. Meanwhile, you're training your kids to emulate and be inspired by all of this stuff.
Now, this might be the only time I side with China in my entire life.
Yeah. When you think about that.
Yes.
All right. That's brilliant. From I don't have any evidence to the fact, but that video, I was like, that really, you know, I did one of those, I have to watch this video again. What was he saying? And, you know, from that standpoint, obviously, and then it makes you think what did President Trump know that he wanted a U.S. company to buy it so that we could delineate from that? Because so much of the stuff, I have a TikTok account and I try and spend less time on it every day, but at the end of the day, all the stupid stuff is people falling, their dogs, somebody's, pet jumping, all of that. And yeah, if you follow some inspiring stuff, you get an inspiring nugget. And there's some that have hacked the system, figured out a way to do that. But man, if that's true, that there's two different algorithms and you're raising a generation to think, well, I can be successful by doing this stupid dance and throwing a video up and getting all these hits. You're disarming the next generation for yourself to come in and take over. Just kind of wild.
This is terrifying, man.
Yeah.
Stop making stupid people famous, please. Just go the other way around.
There was a shirt when I was in high school that a couple people had, and it said I'm famous, and on the back it said in Japan. I always think about those sort of things. Our whole goal is to get the click, and so whatever the algorithm is to set up that provides the click is what people are going to go after. And so, and you even see that, the argument right now, you see that in terms of they're trying to shift that in the podcasting world, everything going on with Joe Rogan right now and that stuff. They never cared about Joe Rogan before. And they really don't care about Joe Rogan. They care about the influence he has, and they don't have an algorithm that can control his. So they have to try and control the companies that control his output. Because there's no algorithm that can just throttle him back. And so they go after Spotify and they go after people that support him and they go after these other things. And Joe Rogan, what he has going for him is that he's so darn authentic. I might be right. I might be wrong. But he's been doing it for so long. He has a track record and he's been honest with his audience. And what CNN and some of these other places don't have is they haven't been honest in a decade and everybody knows it. And so they don't have any viewers left. And the few viewers that they have are the 10 people that work there. And so you get into this space where you can't control the algorithm. And, to come back to your original point, watch me tie this in, right? You want to control the algorithms for life. And, you start talking about VR and you start talking about these experiences. And when you surrender yourself to a program, you miss out on so many other things and you give away your autonomy. And that's why what's happening in Canada right now with the truckers. And I don't know if you heard, but Justin Trudeau came out and is asking Parliament, they voted to do the Emergencies Act, which is going to let him, he can bring the military in. He can do a whole bunch of different stuff under that and just basically put the city on lockdown. And he's doing it because people are parking their trucks. It's so fascinating to me. I mean, he didn't do it throughout any of the, protests that took place the summer before. He actually joined in those protests and they clogged up the city and shut businesses down and all of that. And so it's just very fascinating to watch when they can't control the algorithm, you know, that's what they go after is, you know, we're going to control in some way. And a lot of the last 2 years, and not just because of the pandemic, but so many, the pandemic just exposed what was there. They want to control what you're listening to, what you're saying, what you're thinking. I mean, it's very 1984 and it's just out in the open now. And
so speaking of that, so we brought up Joe Rogan,
yeah,
and you know, most people are findable because of what they talk about, not who they are,
sure,
but he has an audience that's so big,
that 11 million an episode,
that the, let's just say the algorithm steered people away from finding him. It doesn't hurt him at all because his name is findable, not the content.
Correct.
That, you know, is, you know, finding him. So you and I, we can get squished like a grape because, sure, of, you know, we can get, you know, totally ignored. So how, what extent do you think this is going to take? Like, if you can't kill him with an algorithm, mm-hmm, and you can't get people to cancel him because of whatever, like, does this ratchet up indefinitely, or do they give up, or what?
They don't give up.
No. What's the next
thing? Well, but the whole thing is, and I think history bears this out, right? You've tested the waters now with several emergencies, and I think some were legit emergencies. I'm not, you know, but government has never met a crisis they didn't want to take an opportunity to really push something in. And so, you know, in this last pandemic, the emergency, you know, they pushed things that they had no data for. There was no science for anything, social distance, anything, any of those stuff. There's no science to back any of that. They created, why is it 6 feet and not 10 feet? Nobody can tell you that answer. Why can we use these masks versus those masks? And now all the people are coming out talking about this stuff that used to get you banned on YouTube 6 months ago. And now, oh, well, actually, it's been true all along. They just had an agenda and they had, you know, a purpose to pushing this. And so in that space, I think it'll be the next emergency and the next thing. And they just, until people get tired enough, I forget, I heard somebody say this, that they've done studies on this, and they have to leave you with about 30% control for you to just be like, the government's doing what they need to do. And so they'll take up to a certain point, and then, you know, all right, you can't go to work, you need to stay in your homes, we're going to close the schools. And then you get to a point and people are like, I'm done with this. And, you know, you've taken too much. You've crossed that 30% threshold, and then they start to push back. And so you saw that with some of the mandates and some of the things that came across. People were like, whoa. Like, look, we were fine with closing down. We were fine with doing the stuff so that you guys could handle this. But now you've crossed into that space where you're overstepping your bounds. Now, some people would say, hey, you overstepped your bounds way back there. But the threshold for the vast majority of society is like, well, government needs to do something. And so they have allowed them to take those things. So the next emergency will tell the tale. How much are they willing to take? How much do they want to take? And but ultimately, that's, the founders set up our country with a negative system. So all the rights are negative rights in the Constitution. The government shall make no law to infringe on these rights. It's limitations on the government, not on the citizen. And so it's set up that way because your job is not to control us, not to protect us, not to do any of those things. Your job is not to make rights that infringe on any of our natural laws and natural rights. And so the inverse has now happened, right? If you ask any elementary, middle school, you know, my daughter's been doing civics and stuff like that. Even the way they're presenting the material, even though they're presenting it accurately, asking her about First Amendment or Second Amendment, it's not the government is limited in what laws it can make against this. The government protects the law of this, this, and this. It's even in the verbiage that they're using to present the actual rights that are there, as if we get our rights from government, which we all know we don't. And so, you know, as you shape those small things, you know, fast forward 30 years or 40 years, what emergency comes down the pike? Well, is it the government's responsibility to step in and protect me? No, the government's responsibility is not to make any laws that prohibit my natural rights. And unfortunately, we're shifting that narrative.
This is a heavy conversation. You just simply asked how I was doing, and I put this whole angle taking us down how the world sucks and that we're just another minute from another disaster. No, thanks, Joe.
But it's been that way since the beginning. So the emergencies come and the emergencies go, and it is when good people do nothing that stuff continues to spiral. And so it takes good businesses. It takes good leaders. It takes good pastors, good teachers. It takes people saying, all right, enough is enough. We're not going to do this anymore. We're not playing your game. We're not playing by your rules. We're not going to do this anymore. And we're going to stand up and do what's right. And the problem is most people just want to be left alone. And so if the government doesn't take too much and they're left alone, they're like, okay. So they'll take an inch and then they'll take another inch, and it's a slow process over time. If you go back, just even think to our childhood, the amount of how different schools are, how different society is. You know, I think of, going out, and I was having this conversation with my kids because we went through some pictures. My wife and I will be together 20 years the end of this month since we started dating. And we were looking through some old pictures, and my kids were asking stories. So I was telling them some stories. And I was sitting there thinking, like, I said to Charlotte, I lived about a mile and a half from the middle school. And I said, I used to get on my bike and go meet up with my friends, and we rode to school together. And then I walked home, and my mom worked, and I was 10, 11 years old, and my brothers would get off the bus, and it was my job to make sure that homework got done. And mom came home an hour and a half later. We didn't have cell phones. I couldn't call her if I fell. Like, I had to figure stuff out. And people today, that's child abuse. Like, you can't do that. You're only 11 years old. And you look at some of those things and you go, the government has so stepped in a way that it was never designed to step in, and is nannying the populace. It's going to come to a point where people are just, enough's enough. Like, let me live my life. There's a reason we have the don't tread on me flag. Like, that was a reason that was a thing with, Great Britain. Just leave us alone. Like, we'll figure it out. We're industrious enough. We're smart enough. If we're free and you're not bothering me, like, I'm going to figure out how to make a living. I'm going to figure out how to make my community better. I'm going to figure out how to make my family better. The vast majority of people, just leave me alone and I'll figure it out.
Yeah. You brought up business, and this is a little insight from my experience for, the last 2 years or so. There was business people are always like concocting new plans and mm-hmm. putting new stuff out there, but everybody was so reluctant to start doing and activating any of those plans. It's just in the recent, maybe month and a half, 2 months, that those people are sort of like getting off the sidelines a little bit and taking some risk and saying yes and opening up to new deals and whatever. And that gives me a little bit of a positive pressure, knowing that bounce backs in the short term.
We're definitely going to bounce back. I mean, does inflation stink and gas prices and we could go down the list, and there are plenty of pundits that will tell you why the sky is falling financially. It's so funny. I've been looking at that, and I remember the previous recession. I was coming out of college, starting my first job or two and getting ready to get married. And it was like, what a terrible time to buy. What a terrible time. Like, and I remember feeling real negative, under that administration with the stuff that was going on. I was like, man, and it kind of poo-pooed. And now flip-flop, fast forward, 37, and I'm going, and like, all right, so the economy's going to do that. Well, I need to be ready to invest here, and there's opportunity in the midst of this where I don't need to feel afraid of this or afraid of that. And I think it comes back to something you and I've talked about quite a bit. Like, as long as I have my family, I live in a cardboard box. I live in a tent on the side of the road. Like, all the stuff and all the accolades and all the other stuff, like, as long as I'm living my purpose and I have the people that are most important to me. So the pressure of the economy, this and the economy, like, okay, let's look for the opportunity. There's silver lining in this. There's money to be made. There's opportunities to help people. So how can we do that?
So I use an analogy of the jump rope where they, the double Dutch where they're spinning ropes, and then you're watching it, and then you jump into it, and you've got to be perfectly in sync with what's mm-hmm. happening around you. You ever get in that deal where, no matter what it is, it feels like you are on the wrong side of the rope. Like, like, hey, if I had money right now, feet. I could totally be a buyer, and you don't have any money. Or I just sold and then it went down, or just like you did with Bitcoin, like I bought and it went right down. Like, you ever feel like you got a lot of those things that string in a row?
Oh yeah. I think sometimes you hit that space, but it's, I saw this really sweet video a couple weeks ago. And they use these like little, I forget what they are, but they sent two of them this way and two of them that way, and they were all out of sync. And then they spun one like real hard, and eventually they all went into sync with one another. There were five of these little, I don't know, they had little appendages, and they swung, and it used frequency to bring them all back into order. And you know, when I saw that video, it was like a 20 second, it was probably like an ad that popped up on Instagram or one of those spots, and I was like, man, I was like, that is so like life, when you get into those spots where you're like, all right, I jumped into that, well, that was crap. I tried that, well, that relationship flopped, this business thing didn't work out, you know, yeah, I wish I had money to do, you know, I wish I had $250,000 to buy Bitcoin and some of this stuff. Like, it's going to all-time lows, but then it's gonna skyrocket here, especially as some of these things, as crypto starts to become more mainstream, and you're going to lose these big swings, I think, in some of these as it kind of levels out and becomes more of a mainstream thing. I don't think you're going to have the 20% swings or the 40% swings like some of these coins do. It's such a volatile market. But as, you know, NFTs and as these contracts and some of the stuff take off and there's practical use to some of the stuff, it's gonna be really neat to see, to be able to sit there and be like, yeah, well, I bought this much Ethereum at this time or this much Bitcoin, and you know, here we are 5 years later, I was able to sit on X amount of thousands of dollars because I was ready to do it. But yeah, you do look at some of that stuff. I've even looked back, like I started buying Bitcoin and that sort of stuff back in 2016, 2017, and just wish I hadn't sold it. You know, looking back now, I'm like, man, if I would have held on to that, we'd have been in a cool spot. It would have been fun. So, you know, for me, I just look at that and go, all right, I just have to find my rhythm again. And there's a scripture, Joe.
Yes, there Boom. Is.
It's the end of Matthew, and it says, don't come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, I'll give you rest. But in the Message version, which is like a paraphrased version, it's like a, you know, a pastor's way of like saying it. So it's not necessarily true to the original language, but it adds some definition to it. And it says, Jesus says, come to me and I'll teach you the unforced rhythms of grace. And I love that kind of like when I'm in sync, like all of my rhythms are unforced. When I'm trying to force things, that's when I run in and I'm like, oh, I tried to jump into that double dutch and, you know, but when I'm in sync, it's just this unforced rhythm and I just am feeling it. So when I get in that spot, I just need to withdraw, I need to pull back, and maybe some things need to die. You know, death is certainly a part of life. It's why we have winter before we have spring, and you don't get the beauty of spring without the death of winter. And most people want to avoid the death and the fall and all that, but you don't get spring and summer without it. And so when I look at unless you live in Florida or someplace like that, but in a four season area, you know, you have to have that for crops and all of that. You have to have the winter season to sharpen things and to let certain things get into the soil so that you can have good crops in the spring and summer. So
I think your ratio, like, you know, if you have like the oppression up to a certain point, then, mm-hmm. you know, we'll give up certain, so follow me on this here. So if, it just leaked out my brain. What the heck?
Ratio.
The ratio.
Oppression.
What were we just talking about right before that, before I just.
The different seasons and the rhythms being double dutch. You want to do double dutch right now.
What the heck, man? This is what fasting does to you, ladies and gentlemen.
How many days are you in?
I'm just getting back in.
Just getting back in.
So yeah, I'm one day.
Nice. But I do think when you
I'm
look
gonna
at.
I'm going to scream at you if I remember.
That's fine. Yeah. Just interrupt. When people get into bad rhythms or they get out of sync with where they're going.
Oh, here. I mean, you're
go on ahead.
Because you'll remember it. I won't.
Go.
So I the themes that you notice about yourself, and I notice them even with other people, but what ends up happening is people don't like the uncomfort of when you get out of sync like that. And so you want to go back to, even if it's worse, it's easier, you'll pick that over harder, but better. So like, I'm at my best when someone's got the gun right on me, right? Because I'm not going to get in my own way. I'm not going to poo-poo around. I'm not going to make excuses, whatever. I'm going to get done because there's a threat of that bullet that's making me move faster than it normally
so
would.
So you waited till the night before to do your science project. Is that correct?
The morning of. So, but if I'm at my best, when I know I'm out of sync, I know that my brain's going to like force the fact that I'm going to get insane. Mm. Like you might retract and kill some off and move some of the pressures, and it makes it a little bit easier if you're totally out of energy. But you know, what I notice most people that if they would just push beyond that, not change up gears, not kill things off, not really change their plan, usually that horizon on the other side gets me excited. I know I'm ready for a breakthrough right on the other side of when it gets its worst.
Yeah. And, but it takes discernment to know that whether because there are times where, yeah, you want to push through and that's going to be your breakthrough. And then there's other times where I'm out of rhythm. So, but how does Rick Warren say it? He says, you know, there's always, he says, if it's God's will, it's God's bill in terms of finances. But he says, if you don't have enough time, you're doing things that's outside of your purpose. And it's always good to step back and evaluate. So when you start looking at the horizon of things, that God will always give you the time, energy, and resources to do the things he's asked you to do. And so if I start running into things where I'm like, man, like I'm out of time, you know, it's 10 o'clock at night and I'm exhausted and I just don't have time to do this. I don't have time to do another thing. And I start looking at that. I have to go back to my priorities and go, all right, what am I doing right now that's outside of my purpose, outside of my wheelhouse? Because I want to do this thing, but I can't afford to do it. Or in the same way, finances. I want to be able to invest right now. I want to be able to do whatever. All right. Well, I'm spending my money somewhere that's not allowing my purpose to be fulfilled. And so I find myself when I'm out of those rhythms, asking the question of purpose. Covey in Seven Habits of Highly Effective People uses the four quadrants. Talks about the urgent and unimportant, the important and urgent, the urgent but unimportant, and he puts these categories together, and then people, you can help to kind of prioritize your space, and you want to live in a space where it's important but not urgent, so you have the time to get it done. You like to live in the important and the urgent, which is great for a season, but it burns people out. And so to navigate and get stuff in the spot where
have to be selective about what those things
are. And being able to say yes to certain things and no to other things, and recognizing that, you know, I say yes a lot, as long as it fits with my purpose. The things that are outside of that, when you have a clear cut, like, hey, this is who I am, this is what I've been built to do, makes it so easy to say no to things. Cause I'm like, you can have me do that, but you really need a person like this to do that. I can do that, but it's going to be really difficult. I use this analogy with people all the time. Like if you take a pen, and you sign your name with your non-dominant hand, you can get the job done, but it ain't pretty. You put it in your dominant hand, your gifted hand, you get that signature written. It looks much better than with your non-dominant hand. So when I step into things that are not my gifting, I might be able to get them done. Man, there's somebody else that if I put that pen in their dominant hand, they're going to knock it out of the park. And so for me as a leader, I'm much more like, how can I line somebody else up with their purpose? Because yeah, can I do that? I can. But man, this person, like, that makes their life tick. So like, let's put them in that and let them run. Right. So,
all right,
cool. Yeah, this was fun. It was good to catch up, and, we'll see you next guys time. Back here. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate